The next case this morning is number 054182, the United States against Fucco. Mr. Nash.
Good morning, judges. My name is Michael Nash. I represent Susan Fucco. The issue before the court is rather simple. It involves grouping under the federal sentencing guidelines. I think it's 3D12D. The effect of what the court did below was to not group when we believe that he should have grouped the offenses. It resulted in an offense level of 20 instead of an offense level of 15 with the minus, or excuse me, an offense level of 18 instead of 17 and not 15. The issue of the government has made much of the fact that there are different victims. This court in Wilson has rejected that as a sole basis for not grouping. It would appear that the question of whether different victims and different harms are such that they would make the offenses not be grouped began with a case by the name of Napoli, where the court ruled that the section that deals with grouping, when it has the sections that can be grouped, should be considered. I think they used the words are to be grouped.
But you concede in your reply brief that in this circuit, at least, grouping's not automatic. It's something that
no question about it.
The judge should think about. And usually, once we're in that region, once we've made that decision, we review deferentially a judge's decision whether that particular case was suitable for grouping. And here, sort of one of the issues, and I want to ask you too about the subpart C versus subpart D issue, but the question is, how similar or different are these things? And what Ms. Fucco did, is quite different.
The crimes are different if we look at them in the respect that Your Honor is and that the judge did.
She abuses her employer's credit thing, and then she defrauds the IRS. I mean, those really, she could easily have done one and not the other, either way you looked at it.
But if we go to Wilson, which was money laundering, the court noted that in order not to get caught, she laundered the money. Here, in order to not get caught, she didn't report her theft to the IRS. And as I started to say with Napoli, Napoli talked about not being grouped because you were talking about narcotic offenses and tax offenses. Here we're talking about two offenses that deal with money. And we're talking about the same money. And once, it's the 100% of the money that she took from her employer. With the IRS, it's a percentage of the same fee. If you track the two tables, the tax loss table and the fraud table, they're basically the same thing, and this court said so, I believe, on prior occasions. Certainly Petrillo and Fitzgerald, the two Second Circuit cases, said exactly that.
But that sounds like an argument under 3D1.2D.
It is.
And the government makes the argument that even if the judge hadn't grouped, the final level still would have been 17 because of the difference in the total loss and the way the various tables
wrong.
And the guidelines work.
If the judge had grouped, the ultimate offense level would have been 15. As it was, it was 17.
Maybe under C, but under D, the court would have aggregated the tax losses and the fraud losses, would have gone up to $922,000 and change. And, once you work through the guidelines, you'd be back at a 20 and then minus 3 for acceptance.
I didn't 17. Understand that, Judge. But certainly under the
I'm just saying that's the argument they make. And so that makes me think that at least you've got a significant harmless error hurdle for subpart D, maybe not for subpart C. Subpart C has to do with, elements of the offense.
And when we talk about a specific offense characteristic, yeah, there can't be any doubt that in taking in adjudging the tax loss, that's exactly what the court does.
But why couldn't it have been any theft? Why couldn't it have been a theft, you know, that she went to her next door neighbor's house and stole, you know, the mink coats or something, as opposed to wire fraud?
It could. But
well, then you wouldn't have the wire fraud conviction, though. You would have had somebody just walking and stealing.
You would have
coats.
A different conviction, and they would have done the same
Maybe
thing.
Maybe not federal law.
Perhaps not, but in this case, you're dealing with this. What is the specific offense characteristic for, except for that? To say when it comes from a criminal source, you add the 2 points. And it's absolute double grouping if you don't group and you add 2 more points. And that's our point. They double grouped, and they shouldn't have, and the court should have grouped it and given her the credit for it. And you have the precedent of the cases in this court, in Wilson. You have the Second Circuit cases in Petrillo and Fitzgerald. Those two are precisely on point. And to say that when they measure the same money, here in the Seventh Circuit, we aren't going to group, but in the Second Circuit, they will group. Then you have a problem. And the logic of putting those offenses, the tax table and the fraud loss table, in 2D suggests that that's what the guidelines were talking about.
Mr. Nash, you're into rebuttal.
Pardon me?
You're into your rebuttal.
I'll sit down. Thank you, Judge.
We'll hear now from Mr. Young.
May it please the court. The district court properly concluded that the wire fraud offense should not be grouped with the tax fraud offense for purposes of determining the offense level. The wire fraud offense embodied the defendant's embezzlement of hundreds of thousands of dollars from her employer, whereas the tax fraud offense involved her subsequent decision to avoid paying taxes on the proceeds of her crime. The offenses involved different victims, different harm, and separate and distinct acts. First, there's no dispute that the offenses involved different victims. The victim of the mail fraud offense was her employer, Northwest Building Material and Supply, whereas the victim of her tax fraud offense was the government, the United States, and indirectly all taxpayers within the United States. Second, the harm caused by the offenses were different. The wire fraud offense caused a loss of approximately $720,000 to her employer. That represented money that she had taken out of the coffers of her employer and money that had a loss that had a direct financial consequence impact on that employer.
Mr. Young, what worries me about the government's argument is the 3D1.2C part of it, because it looks like the enhancement here, the two-level enhancement, because more than $10,000 of the unreported income resulted from criminal activity, it doesn't say resulted from theft or resulted from use of the wires or anything. It certainly did result from criminal activity. Here, that happens to be the wire fraud. Why aren't we... why isn't that a problem here?
Your Honor, the issue under 3D1.2C is whether the wire fraud offense embodied the enhancement found in the tax fraud guideline, the failure to disclose proceeds of illegal income.
And the wire fraud is the particular criminal activity here, so why isn't that the specific offense characteristic here?
Because, Your Honor, that does not embody the wire fraud. It's the government's position that the wire fraud offense does not embody her subsequent decision to avoid paying taxes on the proceeds of her crime. They involve separate and distinct acts. The tax fraud did not in any manner facilitate or significantly conceal the wire fraud offense. Her employer does not have access to her tax returns, and her employer would not discover the underlying fraud being committed against it if she were to disclose additional income to the IRS. The acts of concealment that facilitated the wire fraud offense, that are embodied within the wire fraud offense, were the acts that she committed against her employer, the destruction of records, her falsifications of reports to her employers, and her destruction or interception of mailings that were made to employers from the banks that were handling the credit card transactions. The tax fraud is an ancillary act to the wire fraud. That perhaps is demonstrated best by the fact that she continued to engage in the tax fraud even after the wire fraud was discovered. Her employer discovered the wire fraud in May of 1999 approximately and terminated her thereafter. Almost a year later, in April of 2000, when she filed her income tax return for the 1999 year, once again she filed a fraudulent return in which she failed to disclose the income she had received from this scheme. So well after...
Your opponent points out that the U.S. Sentence Commission, in one of its publications on frequently asked questions about the sentencing guidelines, takes the contrary position and says that these can be grouped. What do you say about that?
Well, Your Honor, I believe there's a line of cases, Weinberger, from various circuits that have indicated that that letter is not binding, and there are various courts that
sure
have rejected
binding,
that position.
I'm sure it's not binding, but it's certainly a reasoned position, and what's your reasoned opposition to that reasoned position?
Your Honor, we would disagree with it. As I indicated, we believe they should not be grouped because you're speaking about different victims, different harms, and separate and distinct conduct. This is not the case comparable to a money laundering where this court has affirmed the grouping of mail wire fraud cases with money laundering charges. In cases such as that, money laundering, by definition, sealed to conceal the underlying fraud or to facilitate the underlying fraud. That is not the case here.
Well, it does conceal it, doesn't it? Failure to report it doesn't call the government's attention to the fact you're stealing money anyway.
In a very minimal sense. The reality is that the employer does not have access to the income tax return, is not going to learn that there's a disclosure of other income on the tax return.
Government might.
Theoretically,
how would you list it? Stolen money? I mean, theft from employer? How would you list it if you wanted to put it down?
On a 1040, there is an item listed other income that you can disclose other income on.
And you just say other income, or how do you say you got it from?
I believe the instructions further require you to describe the type, such
as...
Yeah,
that's what I mean. So you wind up describing the fact you stole the money.
Well, if her intent was purely to conceal the theft and not to, in fact, keep all the money she had taken, she could have simply disclosed other income and claimed it to be gambling winnings.
Yeah, but that's a violation, too. That's filing a false affidavit. Now she's committing another crime anyway. It doesn't make any difference. I want to know how you could legitimately indicate to the government that you stole money to avoid the income tax problem.
Well, the only way you can disclose it would be under other income.
Yeah, but you have to describe what the other income is.
That's correct.
And where it came from.
That's correct.
Well,
but
you're doomed either way. There is no way that you can legitimately report stolen income.
There may be a contention that whether or not the misrepresentation of the source is material or not, if you are, in fact, representing the source. But nevertheless, in this particular case...
Well, if it's not material, why would they ask?
Well, to help them track sources of income.
Yeah, I know. That's precisely the point. She's trying to keep them from tracking the source of income. What happens if they track the source of income, find out she stole it? Did they report that to anybody? Or did they discover there's now a wire fraud?
If they learn that the source of income was from criminal activity, I assume that they would report that
Me
to someone.
Me too.
I think the chances perhaps of them discovering that would be rather remote. And in any event, the underlying purpose of this act, the government's position would be, was to keep her money, not to conceal her fraud. This is not a case of double counting.
They're not mutually exclusive. Keeping the money and concealing the crime are not mutually exclusive.
Certainly I would acknowledge it may be a secondary purpose to conceal. But the primary purpose of the offense was her to keep the money she had stolen, would be our position. This is not a case of double counting. Quite to the contrary, if the court were to conclude that these counts should be grouped under 3D1.2C, the resulting offense level would in fact have no reflection of the fact that she committed tax fraud in addition to wire fraud. And of course, as the government indicated in our brief and as Your Honor noted, it is our position that under 3D1.2D, if they are grouped, it doesn't make a difference because 3D1.3 indicates that you treat grouping differently according
to... District court at any point in the colloquy indicate that he understood the guidelines to be advisory?
I believe that he did, Your Honor.
I had a hard time finding it.
But I don't have the transcript right available to me at the moment. As I indicated, we believe that the that under 3D1.24, the guideline range would be the same regardless of whether or not they were grouped. For these reasons, the government would request that the court affirm the sentence of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Young. How much time does Mr. Nash have?
3.5 minutes,
sir.
May I put Judge Ripple's question to you? Did the judge indicate knowledge or awareness of the fact that the guidelines were simply advisory?
Yes.
Having done so, what do we do? If we send it back down, he said, well, I knew it was their advisory, and I didn't take the advice.
You said he did, sir?
Excuse me. It was very clear before Booker had been decided, he asked for briefs.
Yeah.
We filed briefs, and it was...
So he could have given the same sentence if he wanted to anyway, whether with or without grouping or otherwise.
Yes.
Did he say that he was using, relying on the guidelines?
No. On page 8 of the transcript of sentencing, which is August 25th, 2005, he said this: okay, I'm satisfied that this is not double counting in any meaningful sense. I think we have two separate and distinct acts, either one of which could have been done without the other. Tax evasion can be found without fraud. Fraud can be done without tax evasion. It takes a specific independent thought process to do each. They're different in kind, they're different in time, and they're different in execution, so I'll deny the objection to and request to modify on that basis. The judge was wrong when he says they were different in time. They were different in exact time. They paralleled each other. The other cases which have said no to this have said that they were different in time. They were not the same thing. They were separate and distinct. Here, just as Your Honor, Judge Bauer pointed out, there was no way that she was going to report it. You have to say from whom, what, and that would have disclosed the scheme. And in Wilson, that's exactly what this court said, and rejected the notion of different victims, therefore different harm. And they said there's an intuitive nature to conceal, and when you do something like that, to follow up, to keep the primary crime concealed, they should be grouped. And that should have been done here. Thank you.
The court thanks both counsel. Mr. Nash, you were appointed by the court to take this case, and you have the special thanks of the court for the fine job that you have done on behalf of your client. The case will be taken under advisement.